Hi, you're listening to Stefan Levera Podcast, a show about Bitcoin and Austrian economics brought to you by Swan.com. Have you been wondering about designing your lifestyle overseas and doing jurisdictional arbitrage? Coinsure NZ, aka Rigel, joins me on the show to talk about his experiences doing jurisdictional arbitrage in Latin America. So this is typically where people are earning US dollars or Bitcoin and living in countries that have cheaper cost of living. So we talk about some of Rigel's recent moves and his experiences as a Bitcoin sovereign individual. We talk about how he views the concept of voice versus exit, as well as some practical tips and things that he has found that have worked for him along the way, as well as common mistakes that digital nomads make. And I know that some of you who have been listening to other recent episodes I've done will be interested in this particular episode in a similar vein. As you know, Swan.com is a great place to stack sats and learn about Bitcoin, and the Swan.com team are also putting on Pacific Bitcoin. This is going to be an excellent event coming up in LA October 5th and 6th. Last year, the feedback was phenomenal, and people were commenting about how they had a great experience and they were able to meet all kinds of Bitcoiners, whether they were just everyday Bitcoiners or the speakers, and they had a real chance to actually make a connection. And some of the speakers coming this year include Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert, Vijay Boyapati, Preston Pish, Greg Foss, Alex Gladstein, Corey Clipston, Lynn Alden, and so many more people. Over on the main stage, there'll be dedicated talks, panels, fireside chats on Bitcoin-only topics. And over in the Swan Dome, there'll be deep dive sessions, and there'll be all kinds of other events and things going on that you don't want to miss. So this is a great opportunity if you have friends and family who are interested to learn about Bitcoin, bring them along. This is the perfect chance to learn about Bitcoin and soak up some of the Bitcoin vibes, as well as help spread the message about Bitcoin. So come to pacificbitcoin.com, get your tickets using the discount code Levera, and remember the dates are October 5th and 6th in LA. I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. Mempool.space is my favorite Bitcoin and blockchain explorer. You can see the multiple layers of the Bitcoin ecosystem. You can see the mempool, you can see the blockchain, you can search transactions, you can scroll back and forth over blocks, you can analyze different blocks based on whether they were reflecting full RBF equals zero or not. You can also take advantage of the Lightning Network Explorer and search different Lightning nodes and even view the transactions that lead to the creation of a Lightning channel or the closure of a Lightning channel. So it's really cool, really excellent in terms of visualizing Bitcoin and the mempool. So go to mempool.space and you can check out all the information there. And don't forget, they also have a mempool accelerator program, which is coming soon. So keep an eye out for that one. And now onto the show with Rigel. Rigel, welcome back to the show.
How's it going? Yeah, good to be back.
Well, lots of things going on in the world of jurisdictional arbitrage, let's call it. I know that's something you're focused on. It's something I like to talk about and think about also. And I think it's becoming more and more clear now with how much things are crumbling in the West that people thought, oh, these are such rich, developed countries. Look how free we are. Of course, Australians, New Zealanders, Canadians perhaps particularly learned why that was not so true in the last few years. And I think an interesting topic that seems to have come up a bit recently as well is this concept of voice versus exit, right? So it's sort of like this idea that some people who believe in this idea of staying and fighting, right, in the country versus exiting. And I'm sure you have some thoughts on that. So do you have any thoughts on voice versus exit as we are today, as we stand today?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think the best quote about this is the Chinese proverb of, I can't remember the exact number, but it's like the 36 ways, I think it's called, is the book or the text it comes from. It's like, from all 36 ways to get out of trouble, the simplest is to leave. And, you know, I think that really sums it up to me in terms of course, you know, there are things in life which are worth standing and fighting for, you know, putting your foot in the ground. But, you know, generally speaking, your best way to get out of many fights of all things, you know, draw my other professional experience and talking you know, specifically about that, but also just in general as a philosophical idea. You know, a lot of the battles that we get ourselves into in our daily lives are things that, you know, we would be better to just walk away from, or at least to consider that. And so, you know, I think in this particular example, yeah, I mean, I think, what is your voice, right? You know, I mean, you obviously you have the democratic system, hopefully, and whatever country that you're in that you can participate in. You know, you can vote with your purchasing power or whatever other things, like, you know, if you own a business, you know, that perhaps is an extension of your will or your influence there, you know, about what decisions you make there. But ultimately, you know, your decisions are quite limited. And in a world that we're in today, I think the other thing to consider is just the way that social media and the narrative is so difficult to kind of capture control. It's really kind of it's the horse is bolted from the stable, if you like, and it's kind of out of control. So I mean, I think really it makes a lot more sense to me to look at these things of, well, you have other options, why would you not simply go to those options and stay? I mean, if you have a very limited set of options, maybe there are some people where, when we're talking about juristical arbitrage, they can't leave where they are, right? They may have some health issue, there may be some family reasons, there may be whatever other things, you know, where this is not an option. But if you have these options, you know, I think, why would you endure the stuff that you are continually, as you were saying, is becoming more and more of an insurance effort to deal with? Why would you go through these things? Why would you not go to places where, you know, where you are treated better, where your options are greater, where, and, you know, usually there are some, you know, there's some logistics and some things to figure out to get to those places and change. But it's like any investment, right? You know, it requires a bit of pain at the start. But if you think about what this will transform into in 5-10 years, you know, I see it's exactly like money or anything else, right? Is invest some energy and time and building a base in another jurisdiction and go there. And, you know, that's much better than trying to change what you currently have. So, yeah, very much exit rather than voice.
Yeah, right. And so I think there's a few different lines that can come up at this point. Sometimes people say, oh, you're a wuss, you should stay and fight, or or the other line sometimes people say is, oh, America is the last bastion, it's the last possible place, and if we don't stand up and win here, it's all over. And of course, now it's different for you and I because we're not Americans, but what would you say to that kind of argument that, you know, this is the one unique place that freedom has to flourish?
Like, America of all places is not a bad place to make that argument, right? You know, if there's anywhere in the world where I think you could make that argument, America is it. But again, you know, it's a case of what is your agency in that battle, right? You know, I think it is quite limited. And, but not just that. I mean, I think that is a viable strategy. You know, you can take the thing of like stand and fight and, you know, push to change things. But what are the real methodologies that people are pushing? And I don't think they're very credible, a lot of the ones that I've heard, right? You know, obviously there's political, you know, like forming a political party, voting for this candidate or whatever. And really, I think the problem is the system itself rather than any particular participant in that. They're not really going to fix things. The issue is the foundation this is built on. Or you have things like, you know, let's get a bunch of guns and, you know, like build a commune or something like that. And, you know, I just think that's not the strategy that I believe is an effective one. Have done some time with, you know, strategic things and things like that. You know, it's, I mean, that's a very appealing kind of emotional idea. But I mean, why would you put yourself in this situation when you can simply just go out the door, go somewhere else. We don't have to deal with this kind of stuff. You don't have to, you know, deal with the possibility of someone shooting at you, you're being arrested, or, you know, all sorts of other consequences. Why would you just not go somewhere where it's simpler, you know? So, you know, I can understand if you're particularly patriotic or whatever, but, you know, to my mind, in my personal opinion, you know, I think the idea of like nation states and patriotism and that kind of stuff is a flawed idea. You know, for much of human history, these imaginary lines around territories did not exist. And, you know, if you've been born 100 years earlier or later, you could have been on a different side of that line. You know, it doesn't really mean to anything. I think to me, what is more important, we think about like what nations mean, it's like a shared sense of collective identity or people that share a culture. And I think the world that we are progressing towards more and more is a world where those things are not defined by national boundaries, right? I would rather be in a location which is not necessarily any geographical space, but it's a shared location where people that think the same that I do, same way that I do, that share my values, that are have the same interests. And to me, that's my, just sounds kind of corny, that's my nation, right? My country, my tribe, or whatever. And, you know, so I think identifying with, you know, let's defend America, New Zealand, Australia, you know, whatever it may be, you know, I think it's an antiquated and a very broad thing. In the day and age that we live in today, you should be more focused and more specific. And, you know, the ability to find those communities and integrate with them, you know, is not that hard to do.
Yeah. Now, another concern people might have is that, oh, if I move somewhere, the communities I try to join, they may be very transient and that there's no real way for me to set down roots. And maybe to some extent, there's a little bit of truth there, but I think maybe there are other ways to mitigate that. So what's your approach there?
Yeah, I mean, that is a valid criticism, I think. It does depend on like where you are talking about, right? Like, you know, if we talk about, say, Mexico, right? You know, there are areas like, take Playa del Carmen, Puerto Vallarta, you know, stuff like that, where, yeah, you know, it is very transient. You know, you get a lot of people who will come in, you know, in the summer or the winter or whatever, whatever the time is advantageous for them, and they'll be here for 2 or 3 months, and then they'll go back to maybe their home country or some other spot or whatever. And, you know, you build up a circle of friends, and then they're gone. And, you know, I've definitely experienced that, and that can be a thing. But also, you know, there are a lot of areas, some are similar to those places. We do have a lot of long-term expat, retiree people who aren't so transient and, you know, aren't so moving around. So, I mean, I think it depends on your location, depends on the people that you associate with too. And I think that, to me, that is the real skill or the thing that you've got to work towards, is generally when you begin this journey, right? You know, you're not thinking about some of these subtleties and some of these distinctions, but, you know, there are different types of people with different types of needs. And let's just say, for example, like family is a big priority, right? Then they are probably going to be wanting to find something more stable, right? Now, if your particular circumstances, interests aren't something that lends themselves to what people who have a family are likely to do, you're probably not going to meet these people. You're probably not going to associate with them. You're going to end up with a different group of people. And, you know, these people in that instance may well be the transient type, right? You know, so I think it's also like, you know, when it's being a bit more aware, certainly versus, you know, what most people have that are just stable in one city or country, you know, working in the place where they've, you know, not too far from where they've been born, or maybe they've moved around once or twice, you know, where they have this ability to choose their location. A lot of people don't kind of think about, well, every time I go, I can start again, right? Now I can create a new reality. I can create a new group of friends, a new social space. If I'm not actively deciding, like, what those interests are, I'm going to go with, you know, whatever the wind blows me or wherever my emotions, whatever take me. And those places may not be advantageous or maybe in contradiction with, you know, kind of these long-term goals, right? So sometimes you've got to sit down and think, okay, well, you know, if I'm really into, you know, building more long-term stable relationships, should I be helping people that want to go to the bar every Friday, for example, or do I want to get into a sport or, you know, something that, you know, is more children friendly? You know, then you're going to meet people that have children are likely to be, again, more, you know, stable and moving around. But again, you know, I think like that's, you know, we can talk about this more, but, you know, I don't think the moving around a lot is necessarily a bad thing either, right? You know, it can be, it's a little stressful and can be a little difficult people to accustom to, but I think there's a lot of advantages also to not being so stable in certain places, so.
Yeah, and it allows you to experience more of different parts of the world. And, you know, people, like, they have different flavors that they may like, right? Maybe you like Asian cuisine, or maybe you like the culture. Maybe it's a conservative culture in this particular Eastern European country, or maybe it's, you know, a certain kind of attitude that people sort of have in, I don't know, South America or Central America, and you kind of enjoy being around those kinds of people. So I guess, and obviously, you know, taxes also, having, you know, being able to have lower taxes, it can also be appealing, though that's not the thing for everybody. So when it comes to looking where in the world, obviously, I get the sense that for you, you're focused more towards, let's say, Central America and South America. Is there a reason for that, or what's your thinking there?
I mean, somewhat coincidence that I landed here, because, you know, my story, you know, we talked about this in the last time we talked, was, you know, I kind of ended up here because of COVID, where I was previously in Asia, in Bali, when this happened, and then ended up in Australia where my parents were, and then need to get out immediately, as, you know, you would now know, would well know about what was going on there at that time. So I ended up in Mexico just because it was open and I had a very long visa that allowed me, you know, okay, well, I've got 6 months here to figure out what I'm going to do next, and who knows how long this is going to go, right? So I kind of landed there by accident, but, you know, when I was there, I realized how much it's made sense. And to me, the reasons I would suggest LATAM over Asia, I mean, the main areas that people suggest for this, right, is, you know, if you're looking for somewhere, you're getting the best value for money, right? It's usually Eastern Europe-ish sort of area, Asia, and it's Latin America, right? And generally, those are the zones where you kind of get the best value for your dollar. And the reason I would suggest LATAM over the other two is that it's much more centralized in a particular time zone. Right. So you do have some variance, but it's a lot more narrow band because it's kind of vertical rather than horizontal, the spread. Language wise, if you learn Spanish, you've got every country in Latin America, bar Brazil, and You kind of bullshit your way through Portuguese, not really, but I mean, it's a lot easier to pick up the basics if you know Spanish, right? So one language gives you all those options versus Asia, Eastern Europe, you know, a lot of different ones where it's very, very different, right? Residency and also tax option wise, I think it's a lot better in this area, and you have a lot more options than you do in the other two. You know, generally in Asia and Latin America, sorry, in Eastern Europe, they're a lot more expensive. They're a lot more complicated. The barriers to entry are a lot higher. Whereas, you know, in this part of the world, there's, you know, there's quite a few options that you have, and a bunch of them have to be territorial tax company countries as well. So that has that added advantage. Time zone is another one. I mean, it depends where you work and what you do, but you know, obviously America is a big earner. And for a lot of people, you know, they at least have some business in the United States, and trying to work those hours in Asia is really sucks. Europe is kind of doable, but in Latin America, you know, it's more or less the same. You know, maybe you've got an hour or two either way, but you know, it's very much aligned with that there. So yeah, I mean, I think for all those reasons, to me, you know, again, it wasn't like I'd actually sat down and figured this out, because you know, when I was in Asia, I was still just beginning this journey. I hadn't even started thinking about this stuff. So I kind of landed here by accident, but you know, now that I've looked at all the options and understood everything, I think Latin America makes a lot more sense than other places, just for those reasons there. So it's simpler, and you can tick double, you know, kind of multiply your work, right? You know, you learn one language, you've got all these countries rather than having to learn, let's say, Thai, Cambodian, Indonesian, and you know, whatever. So yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. And so you recently got a new residency as well. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about that and, you know, why you picked that and a little bit about that process?
Yeah, so now I'm resident in Mexico, Panama, and Paraguay. And, you know, previously, you know, I had Mexico and Panama, and I did both those in 2021. And Paraguay was something which, at the same time I was investigating Panama, you know, I was looking into, and you know, it seemed to have some of the same benefits. Most people told me, like, you know, Panama's a better option. And this was the time when the Friendly Nations visa was still in the old system, where it was a lot easier to get, and you know, that not like it is now, where it's a bit harder, and Panama isn't quite as appealing as it was. So anyway, I did those two, and you know, I was thinking, well, you know, I've got the boxes pretty well covered with these two, right? You know, Mexico, I think, is a great place to live. Tax-wise, you know, if you're permanently basing yourself here, and everything is very clearly set in Mexico, it's not such an ideal place to be. But if you have other options and you're able to, you know, make sure that you set things up correctly, you know, it's a great place to be. To balance this out, and Panama, you know, is definitely not a terrible place at all. But you know, it's probably not my number one versus Mexico. But it, you know, it has ticks all the boxes about the tax residency and where you're basing yourself, at least on paper, in Mexico. But so you know, I wasn't really. I was thinking, you know, I don't really need Paraguay. You know, it was a similar system. It was at the time to Panama, where you basically put $5,000 in a bank account. You know, get your birth certificate and various things like this. Wait a few months, and then you have your permanent residency, and that's the job done, right? So I was looking at that for a while, but you know, kind of what changed my mind was now that it was on the radar, because Paraguay is not a country that most people know anything about, right? Like, what is Paraguay? Like, most people can't tell you anything about the country. But the more that I was aware of it, so thinking about it, the more I started running into people in various types of circles, not just Bitcoin ones, but in nomad spaces and people that are entrepreneurs and things, and how often this name came up, you know, started making it very interesting to me of, you know, maybe there is something here. And I investigated more, and like, you know, it's much easier to file a tax return in Paraguay. You only need 4 months rather than six to be able to qualify to file one there. You know, it has certain advantages because it's in Mercosur, which you can't fully take advantage of as a resident, but you know, you can kind of ride in the coattails a little out of that. And so, yeah, you know, the more I started thinking about it and looking at it, the more it made sense. And you know, what it really comes down to me of kind of what I would say that the reason to do it is, and why I think it's a good idea, is obviously if it's your first residency, then you know, like you have the advantage of all the tax benefits and things like that. But for someone like me, you know, who already has those things well ticked off, dude, you know, I think it's like really, it's like a country club almost, is what it is, right? It's the networking. So the people that you will meet there, while you are living there, but also abroad, who, you know, share some stuff in Paraguay, or are coming and going from Paraguay, they are the sort of people where it's a particular type of person, right? Because, you know, what I like about Paraguay versus, say, So these other digital nomad hotspots you might hear, like, Bangkok or Medellin or Playa del Carmen or Istanbul or something like that, right, is Paraguay sucks. And I mean that in the best way, in terms of, like, I love the place, but these people who are like fair weather nomads, they're never going to Paraguay. You know, there's no like, there's definitely a nightlife. There is definitely nice places to visit. You know, there is beaches, the beaches on the river, but there's not these things that generally pull these people who are there to party it up, and they're more casual, right? The only reason that you're in Paraguay is that you have done your homework and you are interested in minimizing your tax burden, and you've looked at jurisdictional arbitrage and you've realized that this is a very, very good option and a very affordable option for that kind of thing there. So, it is like a filter in terms of, if you are one of these people that's moving around and moving in these circles, you meet a lot of people which, nothing against these people at all, but they're not the same. They're not thinking about things the same way that I am, right? And they have a different lifestyle. And, for me, I'm more interested in meeting people that are on the same wavelength and the same headspace that I am. And I think Paraguay is a great filter for that. So yeah, they're kind of the main reasons why I ended up there, even though I already had kind of a lot of the boxes from Paraguay ticked. But I'm very glad that I did, because I really, I was not expecting a lot, to be honest with you, when I went down there. I thought, well, let's get this plan C done and check it out. But the more that I spent time in the country and really got to know it, the more I realized, wow, this is actually a very livable, very good place. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And so I guess, is this the end of getting residencies for you, or you're still, keeping your mind and eyes open for other options that are out there?
Yeah, definitely yes. Absolutely, doing this stuff is a pain in the ass, right? Do your homework about it, obviously, first. Try and find someone. Generally, some of these things you can do yourself, but generally, especially if it's, you're not fluent in the native language, you're not familiar with some of the ins and outs, it's well worth you paying some money to have someone to do the process with you or for you, right? So, there's investigating the process itself. There's finding that person who's reputable, trustable. Then there's flying to the place, doing all the paperwork, going to the immigration office, whatever it is. And then, you don't need to get these things, but, generally, there's a bank account, there's a driver's license, there's other bits and pieces that need to be procured. And, going through this bureaucracy, particularly in Latin America, can be tiring and draining. So for me, I think I'm pretty well set. And I think this thing can, once you really go down the rabbit hole, can become a bit of an obsession. I'm not closing my eyes off to it. I think, like, to me, probably what would make sense is something in Asia. But even there, it's like probably your best option if you are not going to like permanently set yourself up there long term, but something like, say, the Thai visa, and that's like, what is it, like 25 grand, I think. It's a lot of money to put down for somewhere for 5 years, I believe it is, that you get out of that. And there's just really, not that many great options around the world that are as good as the ones that you can have in Latin America. And so part of it for me as well, what am I really going to get out of these other places? I don't think a ton of a lot. So I've got my eyes open, and hopefully you'll see more of these things pop up sometime in the coming years. But for me right now, I want to take a year or two break out of this stuff and just kind of build what I've set up rather than be chasing, other things around the world. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess there might also be a little bit of maintenance required for each thing that you have. Like, if you were to get another one, well, do you need to spend a certain amount of time there, or kind of upkeep to pay for things? And I guess these are some factors that you might consider also.
Yeah, for all the ones that I have there, like Panama and Paraguay do have a minimum visit component, but it's like 2 days every 2 years, so it's not a hard thing to maintain. Yeah, if you're in this part of the world, like maybe if you were back in New Zealand, having to schedule a trip to Panama where you had no reason to go to Panama other than to hold the residency, might be inconvenient. But for me, it's not a pain at all to retain them. But yeah, you're very right. I mean, there's something for me where I think somewhere like El Salvador is not such a good deal in terms of, it has territorial tax system in certain circumstances, but, like the biggest turnoff for me is, well, there's a 6 month residency within the, remaining within the country requirement to retain that residency.
Oh, to retain residency.
Yeah. And, El Salvador is not a bad country at all, but, I just think when you have these other options in front of you, why would you choose, why would you commit yourself, track yourself to this place for 6 months when you could have something which gives you all these benefits without that, so.
Yeah, I see. Interesting. So, yeah, because that was going to be one of my other questions of, you know, you're in South America and Central America, why not El Salvador? But I guess that you've answered that. And so then I guess you've just got to think about in each place that you go to, you have to get figured out in terms of what place are you going to rent, where are you going to get your groceries, where are you going to, how are you going to pay the bills? If you're earning Bitcoin, you might need to sell some Bitcoin for cash. So you might need local contacts for that or OTC traders for that. So can you talk us through a little bit of the process there of like how you figure it out for each place?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what is very advantageous is to find online communities. Pretty much the only reason that I still have a Facebook account is A, to talk to my parents who are only on that. Yeah. But B, you know, I find that if you go in there and you search expats in country X or city X, you know, you can find some very good useful information from that where you can just search what's already been written or just go straight up there and ask. And a lot of people are very helpful and they'll give this information. There's a lot of good Telegram groups as well. Like, you know, if you're in this part of the world, you know, the My Latin Life one, I think it's a good one that's sprung up recently where, you know, you can get a lot of this information answered and you know, people are quite willingly sharing all these kind of things. You know, like, for example, I went to Brazil recently and Brazil is a very logistically complicated country for a foreigner. Like, if you don't have their tax ID or CPF in, or there's a lot of things which you just assume you can get, which you can't, and things like ATMs. It's very hard to find an ATM where you can actually get cash out with a foreign card. So, you know, being able to like message someone and say, "Hey, what's going on here? Why can't I get some money?" And they say, "Oh, well, no, you got to go to this one specific type of ATM," and even tell you like where it is. You know, that's a very, very useful thing to have. So doing your homework and finding these communities and getting the answers from there, I think is a big one. You've also got to like, there's a trade-off here, right? Like, you want to explore all the options that are available to you, and you don't want to like just pick a place on the map and commit to it because, you know, it may not be the best place, or it may, you know, what you read about it is not what you actually find when you get there. But at the same time, you know, especially if you take a country like Mexico, it's, you know, it's as big as the United States, it has as much variety. You can spend decades trying to, you know, understand Mexico and where it is, right? At some point, you've got to decide, okay, well, this is good enough, and I'm happy with that, right? So, doing a bit of homework about where you're going and trying to get some of that stuff done before, but also leaving your options open about, you know, trying to plan your itinerary where you're not just going to fully commit to one place, you're going to check out a few things before you do. I think that's probably an important one to look into and to check out. And when you're on the grounds, a lot of like expat meetups, which again, you know, you'll find through these online communities is a really important thing. You know, make some friends, catch up with some people. If you're in a big metropolis, like say Mexico City, you know, there's a ton of events going on and a ton of communities and groups, so you can, you know, find some really niche interests. With something like Paraguay, it's a lot smaller, but you know, there's just like a general expats meetup there that happens every month, and it's a really good meetup, like a really good group of people, and everyone is super helpful and super friendly. And you know, I've gone there and asked many questions about like, hey, you know, where do you find this? Hey, what's the best place? What's the best bank or the best location to get this or that done? And you know, get all those questions answered. So finding those communities, participating in them is a pretty big one. I think we talked about this last time of, you know, give yourself enough time as well. Like I would say a month minimum is what you want in the space. Generally, I find, funnily enough, just magically always seems to be exactly a month after you're there, the friends start to pop up and things start to jump out of the woodwork. And for like the first month, you're like, oh, I don't know if this is working. Is this too much? Should I just go back home or whatever? And after a month, it magically happens. So give yourself enough time, I think, is another one. They'd be the main ones. You know, do your homework, find some good online people to connect with, and use them to help narrow down what you're after. But also give yourself a good amount of time to check out the spaces that you're going to, and don't overcommit to one. Like, see if you can, if it's possible, you know, 2 months, 3 months to check out three spaces is probably a good idea as well.
Back to the show in a moment. Are you looking for a job that you can do remotely? Are you looking to learn development? Well, Base58 is a Bitcoin protocol school. And so if you're interested to do Bitcoin development and work in the space or build an app with Bitcoin, Base58 can help you. They have classes and materials ranging all the way from beginner developers all the way up to expert level classes. There are some classes that are online as well as in-person intensive classes where you can learn in a safe, guided pathway from Bitcoin and Lightning experts. There is a Taproot intensive in-person class coming up soon. It will cover using Taproot, TapScript, Schnorr, Frost, and Music too. This in-person Taproot intensive class is coming up just prior to TabConf in Atlanta from the 4th to the 6th of September. And this class is on again in Austin, Texas, the 13th to the 15th of November. So go to base58.info or see the link in description to sign up and learn Bitcoin development. Now, when it comes to your coins, make sure you remember the rule. Not your keys, not your coins. CoinKite.com make my favorite hardware products that you can use to secure your coins, most notably the ColdCard Mark IV. It's an ultra-secure device. It's very reliable. You can set it up without having to plug it into a computer if you choose. You can just plug it into the wall, and you can then generate your seed words, like your 12 or 24 words, and you'll have a pre and post pin. And then, if you wish, you can plug it into a computer directly with a USB-C cable if you're a beginner. Now, if you're intermediate or advanced, maybe you want to use the air-gapped method. So you can use an SD card to ferry that information back and forth and use the cold card paired with your software client, such as Spectre Desktop or Sparrow Desktop or Electrum or even Nunchuck. So it's a really versatile device, and it can work for you along different methods, whether you are a beginner, intermediate, or advanced, with all kinds of features. So if you want to get your cold cards, go to coinkite.com, use code Livera for a discount on your cold cards. And now back to the show. Yeah. And when it comes to a place in each location or jurisdiction, are you thinking about having like a storage unit in each place to save you money instead of having to rent year round in all three places? Or, you know, or are there places where maybe it's cheap enough that you would just literally rent a place for year round, even if you're not spending the full year there? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue I'm dealing with right now because, you know, when I first came to Latin America, it was during COVID, and really there wasn't a lot of point in moving around, right? It was within, you know, the country, within Mexico, yeah. But I mean, you know, I was during that time in Playa del Carmen was pretty much the best place to be, where everywhere else was a lot more closed and regulated, and, you know, the expat communities weren't as good. Whereas like everyone was kind of concentrated in these spaces generally because they were trying to get away from whatever was going on at home, right? So, you know, during that time, I just like rented a place for pretty much the entirety of a year and a half or whatever it was. And that made the most sense, right? Whereas now everything's opened up. I'm trying to make it most of it. You know, I'm speaking at a bunch of conferences. I'm going swimming out these residencies, trying to check out a few other countries in the area, right? And so I, pretty much for a year now, I've been solo living out of hotels and Airbnbs. And the issue is, of course, you know, like, well, you can either have diminished all your positions down to carry on, because like traveling with a check-in is, it's possible, but it's just going to get too, trust me, it's going to get too logistically annoying. So you can reduce everything you have down to carry on, which is possible, but not really, for me, it wasn't the right option, you know. So yeah, I mean, storage unit was what I decided is the best idea. So this is pretty much how I live now, is I have three storage units, and I have like a carbon copy of more or less the same stuff on all of them. So I can show up in these countries with like literally nothing. Like I could show up naked and I would have everything I need, you know, like computer, you know, full set of clothes, you know, of, you know, shorts, long pants, shoes, socks, you know, the whole thing. Set up there. So I can just show up there, and, you know, creature comforts, like, you know, like small coffee machine and stuff like that. So no matter where you are going or like what your accommodation is going to be like or how remote it is, you can show up there and just like swap out your equipment for the next adventure, come back, change it over and do that. You know, so for example, you know, I've just been in Paraguay where, you know, it's quite hot. And then, you know, I've got to go to Riga for a conference there, and obviously, you know, you want a different set of clothes there. So, you know, it gives you the ability to, you know, to swap out the uniform if you like, you know, depending on what you need to do. And yeah, I mean, so you could do that. Instead of doing that, you could rent a place in different spaces. And I guess that depends on your income. Like if, you know, you're a billionaire, why would you not rent like a multi penthouse in these three locations rather than, you know, than a storage unit? But I think, yeah, I mean, I looked at this for quite a while and really kind of thought about it. And obviously, a storage unit is a lot cheaper. You know, the cheapest, absolutely cheapest you'd find a place for, you know, Latin America, you know, even some like Paraguay was quite cheap, is sort of $300 a month. And that's probably not going to be the best place where, you know, if you're living there, you don't want it to be miserable, right? So, you know, you're probably looking more like $1,000 a month. And, you know, if you're doing that two or three places, that's, you know, and you may not be living in either of them for a particular point of time. You know, I was in Europe for a month this year. You know, that's a lot of money going down the drain. And so to me, it seemed to make the most sense to do the storage unit thing, which, you know, it's a little inconvenient, let's say, you know, of like, you know, I really appreciate what I used to have, where you could take a flight and you come back and you just, your fridge is full of stuff to get, you know, your clothes are in the closet. Yeah, you don't have to communicate with some person about a check-in time. You know, you don't have to get to the storage unit and get to the place or whatever, you know. But I think, like, for most people, I would recommend that that is, while you are traveling around and your existence is more transient, that is the simplest way to solve it. And if you, like, are American and you're in Latin America, for example, you know, you could feasibly, it would make more sense to have it where you're based, but I mean, you could feasibly have one in you know, the United States and go and swap over things for 6 months or 4 months or whatever, bring them back in a suitcase. But, you know, for me, like, you know, I'm not flying to New Zealand every time I want to, you know, do some of this sort of stuff. And I've got no real intention of maintaining any sort of long-term existence there. So to me, this made a lot of sense too, of like, well, I want to have some possessions that are more than a backpack, and I've really got to create a base somewhere. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to leave. I'm not going to, like, rent a place for 6 months, for a year or whatever. Just get a storage unit, and that just leaves you so much more options of when it's time to get something more permanent, if that's what you're going to do. It's easy to cancel that, and the upkeep is very low. And yeah, it just gives you that functionality. So I think, yeah, that, to me, that's the optimal solution I figured out for the moment. But yeah, I mean, it can get a little, sometimes you just want your familiar place and go back to. So, you know, maybe I might change my mind on that at some point.
Yeah, no, that all makes a lot of sense. Obviously, the storage units are going to be a lot cheaper, so that's a much more cost-effective way to achieve things. Curious as well how you're seeing the residency market shift and change, because what we've seen is certain programs have either raised the price or made it more difficult, more bureaucracy. How are you seeing that in terms of Latin America and residency programs?
I mean, I think overall, it's getting more difficult and more expensive. You know, there's a couple where I'm not too familiar with Colombia in detail, just because I've looked at that and it's not really my killer fish. But I know they've made that slightly more complicated for residents there. Definitely Panama, you know, the Parental Nations Visa changed in 2021, where now you've got this like kind of 2 year temporary thing. And, you know, it's quite hard to get that temporary residency. There's kind of hacks or ways you can get around it. But you know, that's become more difficult. Paraguay is still, you know, quite easy. But, you know, for example, there's an interesting development that they've had. Well, first off, actually, when I was first looking at this, it was permanent residency, as I said, you know, for $5,000 in the bank. And then you withdraw it later and you got permanent residency for life. More or less, you've got to renew your card every 10 years. That's it. So I was looking at that in October, and I thought, like, maybe I'll do this in February. And then this is actually an interesting cautionary tale. You know, they just literally 2 weeks later, they just like that changed the system. And I've been thinking, because what happened with Panama is when they changed the Parental Nations Visa, they gave you like warning. There's about 90 days where like this is the world is going to change in 9 days. So a lot of people gone the last minute. You had the time to get the documents, to get to Panama, to do the stuff, to get the residency. Whereas Paraguay, they just changed it instantly, right? And so there were, you know, literally people who landed the day before that and had an appointment the day after it that now were just, you know, unable to do the process. So they changed that system to what Paraguay has now, where you, in some ways it's easier because before you had to have that lump sum of money to prove like solvency, whereas now all you need is a birth certificate, a criminal record, a proof of no criminal record. And that's it, you know, that you need to be able to get residency there. So it's become easier, but, you know, you've got that 2 year waiting period. And then as I understand it, it's still, some of the details are still being worked out, but as I understand it from what I've seen, it's going to be like the old system. You've got to put the 5,000 in the bank and then you can get permanent. Right. So things are getting more complicated. They are getting more difficult. And I think the sense that I get is this, is that, you know, pre-COVID and certainly, you know, pre-remote working become more of a thing. You know, these programs were designed for people who are retirees or high net worth individuals that had investments and things, you know, that were able to move around. And they're geared towards, we want these people, right? And, you know, we kind of had this good fortune for people that aren't in that boat where if you're a remote worker, you can technically qualify for this because, you know, these were kind of based on the assumption, well, people that didn't have the sort of money, didn't have that sort of lifestyle aren't going to be able to just, you know, travel as frequently as remote workers are. So remote work, and then of course COVID, of a lot of people starting to look into this and think about this a lot more, has really made this stuff a lot more popular. And you can see that, you know, like these things are getting more and more known, and these names are getting more and more out there. And so I think my sense would be that, you know, these countries know about this. They see a business opportunity, and they also see that maybe this is not collecting the kind of clientele that we were intending. Certainly, as I understand it, that's why the Friendly Nations visa was changed. My assumption would be that these things are going to close sooner rather than later, and that if you're interested, you really want to get onto it sooner rather than later, because, you know, these opportunities are not going to be there. I mean, like, hopefully you will see other countries realizing, hey, there's an opportunity to get, you know, what are your options here? If you want to up the income and the education level, et cetera, of your people, I mean, you can invest in decades-long programs to reschooling and things like this, or you can just import a bunch of people that are not too culturally dissimilar, that are going to follow these criteria, which means they integrate well. And so I think there are countries that are going to also realize that, though, it's to our advantage to get these guys in, as long as we can keep them in some way and we can make sure that we get benefits from them. So I think, you know, I could see a world where this will could swing back the other way, but for now, I think that the window is closing more than is opening, and who knows where this hypothetical idea I was just saying about it opening up again may take place, you know.
Yeah, interesting. And so there are arguments and points going both ways on that. So, for example, there are some countries who are opening up digital nomad visas, right? It's literally called a digital nomad visa, right? So there are countries who are opening that up, but on the other hand, you have, let's say, some tension sometimes where maybe the locals don't like that. So probably a famous example is in Portugal, that there were some flare-ups there, from what I understand, where some of the locals had a concern that they were getting priced out of their local property markets because of all the people buying golden visas and things like this, buying property. And so then I believe the Portuguese government changed the program such that you could no longer get golden visa by buying property in Lisbon and maybe one or two other places, because they were the popular ones. And they sort of shifted the program because they were, you know, there was pressure from locals. So have you seen any of that in terms of LATAM?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about, say, gentrification and that kind of stuff, it's a little, depends on the country. I mean, I'm not super familiar with Portugal. You know, I've been plenty of times, but I'm not like super, never spent an extended amount of time there. So, you know, I wouldn't feel like I can totally comment on, like, you know, the atmosphere and the air there versus here. But it seems to me like things in Portugal have been going for quite a long while, and they've got to that particular state. They're quite a bit more advanced than I think LATAM is. I think that's, you know, that's in Europe, it's proximity to other places. You know, it's got a long history with England and things like this, a popular place to go, whereas some of these other places are a bit more scary. I think, there is a little, but not certainly not a place like Paraguay. People are like, why are you in Paraguay? Like, man, wow, awesome. You know, there's a foreigner here, you know. and Mexico, and like certain specific parts of Mexico. Yeah. Like, you know, kind of a bit of meme now about, like, you know, the Zona Gringo, if they call it, like, you know, like Roma Condesa, Polanco, you know, that kind of area, you know, that gentrification is happening and prices are going up. But I mean, these areas too are always off limits to most Mexicans, for the rich kind of people and stuff like that. So, you know, it's kind of debatable. So, yeah, I mean, I think a little, but it's not a very strong thing, I think, in Latin America. I think, you know, a lot of people here more than others, more than in other areas, you know, kind of see it more as like, hey, if you come in and you bring in money, great, you know, come on in. I wouldn't say it's that strong. And when it comes to the digital nomad visas, I mean, yeah, they're positive. But the other thing to remember with those is, like, they are temporary visas for a particular set of time. And if you want to explore a space, you know, like a good example of it is Brazil, where, Brazil is, they're a bit more hard ass. Colombia is like this too, where if you're someone like Bali or Indonesia or Thailand, you know, it's quite easy to do this perpetual visa run thing, right, where you just drop the border every 9 days, 6 days, whatever it may be, get a visa, and there's people that have been living there for, you know, 10 years like that, right, whereas countries like Colombia and Brazil, they do not entertain that. They'll bounce you at the border if you've spent more than 90 days and 6 months or whatever their criteria is. So, you know, the digital nomad visa for Brazil, for example, you know, allows you, as I understand, to get a year. And, you know, that's a bit of a difficult thing to do in Brazil. So it's an option in, but it's not residency, right? You know, it's a good way to explore the country and get your head around it. But, you know, maybe may well be that you can get 6 digital nomad visas in a row. But, you know, that's very much up to the government. They can change a lot. Oftentimes these visas don't quite give you the rights about opening bank accounts and other things about firmly establishing a base in a country that, you know, a permanent or temporary residency may do. So I think like these no digital nomad visas are good, but it's not that good a deal for you. I think if your ambitions are solely transitory, you just want to check the place out for 3, 4, 6 months a year, and that's all you have in mind, it's fine. But if you're trying to do flag theory and really base yourself in somewhere else and really get established, they're not quite what I think people think that they are, right? They're a good introduction, but they're not going to give you the rights and the abilities that you want out of, you know, residency.
Yeah, okay, that's a really good point. I hadn't considered that. So, yeah, definitely makes sense to bias towards getting some kind of residency or some other thing. And it, you know, in some cases, maybe that's for people who are at the higher net worth level. They're looking at buying a passport or citizenship by investment, that kind of thing. And of course, yeah, as you said, getting residency in particular, some of these countries where you're planning to try to put down some roots, or get a security, get a storage locker at least, yeah. Even if you're not renting a place.
Yeah, I mean, and your mileage will vary, right? You know, like the digital nomad thing may work. Those visas may work in certain countries, and you may find a certain branch at a certain bank that will open a bank account for you with that visa, right? But generally, as a rule, you know, this is not when you are a temporary resident. You know, you'll see this with things like driver's licenses and other stuff, right? Where, you know, often there are rules, regulations that clearly make these distinctions, right? And a digital nomad visa, I wouldn't be surprised to find that some of them will look at that very differently than temporary resident or permanent resident. So again, do your homework and look into this stuff. And this is kind of like an emerging space where it may change and the information may not be that available out there. But it's something to consider. And I think like if your goal is really, you know, getting different flags and something more permanent, then you should be looking at those kind of residencies rather than these digital nomad ones.
Yeah. Also, I'm curious if you've seen overall growth in the numbers. Now, of course, I'm not expecting you to have like exact numbers, but do you get a sense that there are more people doing this kind of, let's call it digital nomad or Bitcoin nomad or whatever you want to call it? Do you get a sense that the groups are growing or that there's more people doing this? Or do you think it was more like a temporary rise during COVID and now it's kind of dropped back down after?
Yeah, a little hard to gauge. I mean, anecdotally, I would say in the places that I go, I would say that I think overall it has increased. It's hard for me to say because, again, I wasn't really in this part of the world before COVID. But, I mean, I think it's only getting more and more. The volume is only increasing is my kind of thing. And I think probably I would say is an accurate statement to make that for the population in general, there's probably more people who are afraid or apprehensive about traveling during the COVID period than there are now, right? So I really think that, you know, as a general statement, there are more people who are interested in working remote and are trying it out now than there was during COVID. The only backlash to that would be, I think, during that period, A, it was kind of new, so kind of got ambushed on a few employers and also they're trying it out. But you are seeing a bit of a backlash. You know, it's in the news quite a bit about some large corporations putting some caps and some rules on this about time lengths, or, you know, nomad, you can work remote, but it can only be within the continental United States or whatever it might be, something like that, right? So a little 50-50, but I mean, I think it's more like the cat is out of the bag now, where people who didn't even consider this as a possibility realize, hey, I can do this. What is this going to mean? And, you know, there's a lot of people in the kind of online communities I see. It's not just taxes or lifestyle, well, I've come with this lifestyle, I'm about to say, but a lot of things like dating, you know, like a lot of them are like, you know, I'm not having that much luck where I am, or I don't like, you know, where the way that the culture in general of my country is going. And I feel like, you know, women or men, I'm sure, is probably this conversation we had too, but, you know, women are much more traditional in this particular country, and they're much more appreciative of, you know, what I have to offer in aggregate than they would be in a Western country. So, you know, I think there's a lot of movements like that. Like, I don't know if you've heard of like passport bros thing, you know, which is all guys get their passport to go and, you know, date, let's put it that way, a woman from Latin America or other countries like that. Right. And that's kind of like a wholly separate genre from these people that are talking about jurisdictional arbitrage tax and stuff, but they all kind of have converged in the same kind of space where a lot of people are realizing that, there are much better options available to me, and I can take advantage of them with the world that we live in today. So I think it's only getting bigger, and these subgenres are only going to increase.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, right? It's kind of people who are going overseas, whether that's for lower taxes, a different dating environment for people who are dating, and you know, people are just realizing that you know, the place where they are born is not necessarily the place they have to do everything in. And so I'm also hearing more stories, and I'm sure you're seeing this as well, is the rising cost of living in the Western nations. So we're seeing even people in Canada, America, Australia, we're seeing some of these videos of people saying, I can't make ends meet, you know, it's costing too much, even on you know, a decent salary or an average salary, they can't make it work there. And then I'm curious if you're seeing that where people are, let's say, they can't make it work in the Western country because just the cost of living has gone up so high that they actually, for that reason, they're moving to LATAM or Asia or other places.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, without a doubt, you know, there's an awareness that you get a bit of bang for your buck. So even if it's not that you're breadline like that and you're doing it completely out of necessity, it's like, well, you know, I'm going to spend $2,000 in an apartment in somewhere in the United States, whereas what I'm going to get in LATAM for that is significantly better, right? So I think people are looking for better options. But yes, I've also seen people like that. A lot of people that are like trying to start their own thing, right? Where, you know, they've worked at a time at a company and maybe they've exited with some equity or, you know, they've just saved up a bunch of money and they decided, okay, I've got this pet project, I want to really give it a go. So I'm going to set myself up somewhere where I can minimize my cost of living and get my burn rate, if you like, down as low as possible and just try this for a year and see if it happens, right? And I think you get a lot of people like that coming here now. And I mean, it does need to be said, you know, the same inflation and increased cost of living, you absolutely are seeing it in this part of the world, right? You know, things are going up. General cost of living is definitely increasing. And in a country like Mexico as well, you're seeing even more because, you know, the super peso, as they're calling it, is, you know, has gone up versus the US dollar. I mean, like, traditionally, it's been like 20 pesos for one for the longest amount of time. And now it's like, I looked at it for a little bit, but like 16. So, you know, that is having a big effect on people in Mexico, for example. You know, so it's not all like roses. But I mean, like, if you're the impression that I certainly have is that if you are if money is your really burning issue, certainly even in a country like Mexico, which is probably the most getting to be one of the more expensive options just because of the exchange rate. And if, you know, if you're not picky about living in a bustling metropolis, if you are willing to go out, you know, in the wilderness a little, you know, like, man, there's still some crazily cheap deals available, way better than anything else you're going to get in a Western country. But not just that, you know, something I see when you go to America is, you know, you get paid a lot more money in America generally, but, you know, they know how to pick it out of you at every, you know, every possible place, you know. And so there aren't so, like, the general cost of, like, going about your day-to-day business, I think, in this part of the world, are definitely a lot lower. So, that, you know, that'd be the other one, I think, too, of you know, that, you know, it is rising here too, but I think generally, you know, the cost of just existing and what you need to survive, especially if you set things up correctly, and this is what you're organizing everything around in this part of the world this year, is significantly lower.
Yeah, interesting. And yeah, in terms of having a low burn rate, I know Chiang Mai in Thailand is another common place that people do that kind of idea where, because the cost of living is so, or can be very low, that's a common place that people try that kind of idea of, I'm going to have a really low burn rate, I'm going to go here and try to set up a business and try to, you know, make it that way. I'm curious if you have any insights on, you know, common failure reasons. Like, what are some things that, you know, people who, if you've seen like people who tried it and failed, you know, were there any big mistakes that you thought they made, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot more of this in these digital nomad hotspot places, like say Playa del Carmen, right? Where you get a lot of people that come, and you certainly see this, absolutely saw this a lot in Bali when I was there. Get these people that come and they just think, I'm going to show up and it's just going to materialize, right? You know, I'm going to get there and I'm going to open my laptop and business or like a business idea is going to come out of the sky, whatever. I'm going to just start posting some photos on Instagram and somehow money is going to materialize, right? And they realize that's not going to work, right? You need to have a plan, the strategy. You need to, you know, save up effectively and have a very long runway to be able to figure things out if you're not coming there, right? So a lot of these people that arrive, they arrive without an income stream or without an idea about how they're going to do this. So that's how I think a lot of them leave. You know, in Bali, it's more like they show up and they're obviously there on their parents' money and they're having a great time, the life of the party for 3 months, and they mysteriously disappear off because the money ran out, right? And Playa del Carmen, you see a lot of people that think they're going to be a coach of some sort of description, and you know, they realize that it's a very hard game to get into, you know, that eventually it doesn't work out, right? So, you know, not sharing with a plan and not sharing with a runway, I think it's probably one of the biggest ones. You do see some people that leave just because they get a little bit of fatigue burnout, right? Like, especially, you know, if you're not fluent with a language, you're not willing to get over that hump, you know, it can be very frustrating to do some pretty basic sort of day-to-day stuff, right? And that can start to get on your nerves, right? You know, like just your day-to-day stuff, going to get groceries, you know, having to sort out this errand or that errand can become longer and a lot more irritating and draining because of the language barrier and the cultural barrier sometimes as well. You know, people in this part of the world generally aren't as time-driven as we are in the West, you know. So that's another thing where I think some people, they miss the comforts of home, or they just get frustrated with the general experience of living in this other kind of country. And that's something I think you just have to try. You know, it's not for everyone. Some people will realize and they'll come to the conclusion that, you know, for all the money that I'm saving, I'd rather just not have to deal with this bullshit, right? And, you know, it's fair enough, I guess, you know. So they're the main ones, I think. And, yeah, they'll be like sometimes people have issues, right? You know, there's a family emergency, there's a health issue, something else goes on, and they, you know, or a relationship breakup is another one you see where people bail because life circumstances have changed and this is like no longer viable like it was. So yeah, I mean, I think they're probably the biggest ones. It's just like show up with a plan, have a good runway to prepare for the unexpected, and be, you know, be experienced, be realistic about the learning curve and the, you know, the culture shock that you're going to experience, and that it's going to come with frustrations, right? Things are going to be cheaper and you're going to live the dream in some ways. In other ways, like every time you want to go to, you know, go to the bank or something like that, it's going to be like, oh my God, this is like a half day experience now, like, you know. So yeah, they're the big ones.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, I guess bottom line though, the whole point of this is that you can get more freedom or potentially lower taxes or lower cost of living, or maybe there's a particular culture that you really enjoy. I think those are probably the, at the end of the day, if people are pursuing this, it's because of that reason. So I guess if you had to sum up, you know, why do all these things? Why even try to do this jurisdictional arbitrage thing? How would you sum it up for people?
Yeah, so I think what you just touched on, certainly like taxes and having options about structuring your life, you know, is advantageous. Simple one outside of taxes, for example, I remember when I was stuck in Australia for a while, I don't have a motorbike license in New Zealand, and I was riding a motorbike a lot around in Bali and thinking, wow, yeah, I really like this. I've never, you know, never was really into it or tried it before, and I'd like to get my motorcycle license. You know, in Australia, you gotta wait 2 years, take this driver's course, and you go through all this rigmarole. Whereas, you know, somewhere like Panama, it's a hell of a lot simpler. You just drive around the track once, and you know, in some countries, you just pay them some money, and you got your license, right? And that license is internationally recognized, right? So there's advantages like that about if you have that other residency, you can go to this other country and get things done. Or signed off. Another one maybe that might be kind of more relevant to some listeners is, you know, a lot of exchanges, if you're having to KYC an exchange, they will take a residency card and certainly a national ID as proof of residency. And so depending on your jurisdiction and whatever things there, you know, I mean, if they are asking, if your country goes to that exchange and says, tell us all the details of citizens from our country that are residents of your thing, if you have KYC'd as a another jurisdiction, they are not going to find that information. So, you know, there's some financial privacy stuff about that as well, which, you know, again, I would encourage you to look into that in detail and not just take what I said as carte blanche, because there's many subtleties to that. But that's a plus, right? So there's some jurisdictional things that you can get out of this. I would say the biggest one, though, for me, that I think really in aggregate is a lifestyle thing in the terms of very much about like your quality of life and how much you enjoy things and how your life will turn out is dependent on your environment, right? And having the ability to have these options available to you, where it's not just that you can go for a month or for a holiday, but you can live your entire life in 4 or 5, 6 different places instead of one, is a very big advantage. You know, for example, another advantage of Paraguay, which I didn't even really consider until I was just there, is at the moment it's winter, and right now in the Northern Hemisphere it is summer. If you time things right, you know, you can be living perpetually in the summer, right? You know, you can just, as soon as, you know, it starts to get towards winter, you shift to the other hemisphere and you got much more hours of sunlight and a much more, you know, nice kind of space if you enjoy the sun. And also, like, beyond that, getting more specific, you know, like, maybe you really like the beach, but you also like snowboarding, right? You know, or something, some bizarre thing like that. Or there's one particular space that you found that's really nice in this time of year. Like, for me, you know, I absolutely love, like, Dia de Muertos, like, here in Mexico, you know. And so, you know, I want to be in Mexico in October, right? You know, to take advantage of that, right? So being able to design a schedule, a lifestyle, right, where, you know, you could be somewhere for 2 months and do what, you know, we call like monk mode, right? Like, blot everything else, just knuckle down, get some work done that you need done for the year. And then that's out of the way. And the rest of the 10 months of the year, you can relax a bit more and socialize. And maybe the place that is conductive to you getting a ton of stuff done is not the place where you would like to socialize, right? And being able to design your perfect schedule in terms of not just the physical location, but the things that surround that and the options that are available to you, which give you your ultimate life. I think that's probably the biggest one, right? And that requires a bit of homework and a bit of investigation. But that's really, I think, the ultimate goal is, like, never being in a place where you think, man, this sucks and I wish I was somewhere else. You know, always being more or less where you want to be anytime within reason. I think it's probably the biggest advantage of doing this, of being able to have that lifestyle design.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic spot to finish. I think lifestyle design makes a lot of sense. We get one life, and you have to really think carefully about how you want to spend that time. And I think a lot of people are stuck in what I'm going to call home country bias, which applies even in the investing world, but can also apply in terms of your life. Where do you live? How do you spend your time? Interesting. Let's wrap up here, Rigel. Where can people find you online, and is there anything else you want to, you know, any messages you want to put out there?
No, I'll just say, usually on most of the social stuff, I'm CoinSureNZ, CoinSureNZ. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter, Telegram, any of those kind of spots. And if you've had any questions, my DMs are open, and I'm always keen to help people out with this kind of stuff and do that. And yeah, I would just, closing comment, I would encourage everyone to look into this and look at, like, having a plan B of some sorts as an option, and just seeing about how that can dramatically increase the quality of your life, even if you're not going to spend a lot of time there. Even if it's 1 month a year or 1 month every 2 years, just having that freedom, that option, I think it's, like, really, really beneficial for you in terms of, like, the state of your life, but also your mental health. Get into it, check it out. Don't be afraid.
Fantastic. Thanks, Rigel.
No problems.
If you're enjoying the show, make sure to leave a like and share it with your friends. Get the show notes at stefanlevera.com, and I'll see you in the Citadels.